Thanks, Anna. That's great. I'm going to take our reading now, and we're reading chapter 1 of the book of Daniel. I'm going to read all the chapter. So that's Daniel chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles from the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of God in Babylonia and put in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. Now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, "I'm afraid of my lord, the king, who has assigned your food and drink. Why should he see you looking worse than the other young men of your age? The king would then have my head because of it." Daniel then said to the guard whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see." So he agreed to this and tested them for 10 days. At the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the other young men who ate the royal food. So the guard took away their choice food and their wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables instead. To these 4 young men, God gave knowledge and understanding of all kinds of literature and learning, and Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. At the end of the time set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in his whole kingdom. And Daniel remained there until the first year of King Cyrus.
Thanks, Sue. Very well read. There's some tough names in there for you this morning. I felt a bit mean. She went, "What's you reading?" The whole of Daniel 1. Anyway, good morning, everybody. It's great to see you here this morning. For those of you that were here last week, you may remember we had an all-age service, and we're looking at how to be great. And part of that, I learned a lot about you. I learned that some of you are extremely competitive because we did rock, paper, scissors. I even had someone come up and say, "Why didn't we actually find an overall winner to find out who was the greatest?" I went, "Seriously? It was just a game. It was just an illustration." But also, we learned a lot about what it means to be great in God's eyes as well. And we learned that we are all God's handiwork. But what about when we don't feel so great and when situations or circumstances that we face are actually really hard? Or when we actually try and implement changes in our lives and it just doesn't seem to work out? So, for example, you may have started at the beginning of this year with the whole tradition of having New Year's resolution, and you've set out to do or to make some changes in your life that are going to make your life a little bit better. And already you may feel that you've you failed in your resolution. And I'm just going to put my hand up and say, there's one or two that I've made, and already I'm like, oh, do you know, I've failed already, and we're only just into March. Well, if you're like me and you feel you've failed, you're in really good company. Because I found out, did you know that in terms of New Year's resolutions, 92% fail? 92%. So that means in this room, there's only 8% of us that whatever resolutions we've made this year, we're actually going to succeed. So you're in good company this morning, that most of us in some way may have already failed. And I kind of thought, hang on a minute, so what's the point of actually making resolutions in the first place if all we ever do is break them? So this whole issue of what the resolve that we actually have, what are some of the things, what's the problem? And I think it comes down to this, because actually fulfilling a New Year's resolution in some way, if we decide that's where I want to be, that's what I want to do, it means in some way there's got to be some form of sacrifice. Usually some form of disruption to daily life, the usual routine that we have. And whether it's sacrificing our time, our money, or our energy, it's something we've always wanted to do. But as we all know, temptations and failure and distractions get in the way. And so how actually do we overcome them? So what we see is in the passage that Sue's just read for us very well this morning, with all these weird and wonderful names, we see some young men, including one called Daniel, who face difficult circumstances, but who had resolve and actually made a decision and stuck with it. So we're going to look at that this morning. So we're looking this morning in that first chapter of the book of Daniel. So to set the scene, you have this king, Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babylon, and decides to come and invade Judah. And what he does, he besieges the city of Jerusalem and eventually destroys it. And he doesn't just destroy the city, but he burns down the temple as well, and he takes away all the things that they hold special in worship of God, and he takes them back to his own city and his own temple, to his own gods. And he places all these things that are holy and precious to the people and puts them at the feet of the statue of his own God, as if to say, this is how great your God really is. He's beneath my God. He's just basically having a real go. And he's basically saying, the worship of your God is so outdated, it's so irrelevant, I'm taking anything that matters to the worship of your one true God, and I'm showing you how insignificant it is. But he doesn't stop there. He says, look, I'm not even just going to destroy your future, I'm going to destroy your future as well as your present. And he says to his leaders, find the sharpest and the brightest sons of royalty and the nobles and bring them to me back in Babylon. Because what he's going to do is he's going to indoctrinate them in the Babylonian culture. He's going to train them, and he's going to train them for 3 years, and then he's going to use them in his own government. So what he's basically saying is to Jerusalem and to Judah, I'm not just going to destroy your city, ruin your temple, take everything you hold precious, but I'm also going to take your future from you by taking the best of your young leaders, and I'm going to make them my leaders, so they won't be yours, they're going to be mine. So that as a nation, you literally will have no future. This is a very intentional and strategic plan to indoctrinate and assimilate some young guys into a Babylonian culture, to actually destroy the future of an entire nation. And so, in other words, this king's wanting them to think and act and behave like Babylonians. And I think the danger for us is that sometimes if we don't stand out and we're always blending in with the culture around us, then for us, we can ask the question, are we actually truly following Jesus? Because what does it actually mean to be holy? When you follow Jesus, when you're following God's ways, what it actually means is, the word holy actually means to be set apart, to be different to those around you. And Judah and Israel were supposed to be set apart and different from the other nations. And the difficulty had been, they had tried to blend in with everybody else, and God had enough, and he said, okay, these guys are now going to come and make you part of them. And it may feel like I'm leaving you, but I'm going to let this happen so it actually brings you to that point of actually having to make a decision. Are you with me or are you against me? Because I want you to be holy as I am holy. And for us, even today, in this diverse culture that we now live in, there are times where maybe we need to stand out and actually have a resolve to be a little bit different to people around us. So let's see what happens in the life of Daniel and his friends. But let's start with the question, who or what influences or changes you? Because if, like me, you've made some resolutions at the start of the year and maybe you're thinking, ugh, I've not done that, whether it's, oh, I'm going to do a Bible reading every day and I'm going to keep up with it and I'm going to listen to Nikki Gumbel every morning on Bible in 1 year, whatever it is, or whether it's, you know, I'm going to do the dishes every night, whatever it is, and then you wake up in the morning and you just go, ugh. Whatever it is, there's something else that is actually changing or influencing you to stop you making that change that you want to see happen. You see, what the Babylonians try to do is they try to influence and change these young men in three ways: their diet, their names, and their culture. You see, the chief official gives them new names: to Daniel, the name Belshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; and to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. So why do they change their names? Well, let's get this into context. These young men, we call them, biblical scholars think they were only probably between the ages of 12 and 15. Imagine that. Somewhere between the ages of 12 and 15, these young men see their homeland brought into ruin, besieged by the Babylonians. They are then taken from their families and from everybody else and taken to Babylon, and they're now being given different names. The Babylonians are trying to strip these young boys of their identity. They're taken thousands of miles away from their home. They're crushed of all dignity, and the first thing the king wants to do is he's wanting to change their names. Why? You see, because their original names given by their parents were all tied to the worship of Yahweh, the one true God. And their new names are all tied to the worship of false pagan gods. So every time someone calls them by their new name, there's a reminder when someone calls them by that name. You are now serving someone else. You are not serving the God who you once served. You're serving this one. Then they're going to change their diet. And as we read, they're supposed to eat a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, the food that has been prepared for the king. Now, I don't know about you, but if I've been taken thousands of miles away from home and stripped of my name, and then I hear, by the way, you're now going to eat the food from the king's table, I'd be like, hello, this is a bonus. I'm expecting to eat gruel or something, but I'm getting the food from the king's table. Show me where I'm sitting, please, because I want some of this. On the Alpha Away day yesterday, I'm sat there, and we'd ordered some food. We were in Inglewhite and we went to the Green Man for lunch, and they do if you've never been, by the way, I'm just going to quick promo, they do amazing handmade pies. I'm not kidding. And they brought these three pies out and I'm like, I have to choose? I have to say, I ate way too much pie. And it was British Pie Week this last week, so you know, you have to live it out. But anyway, And in my head, I'm going, I've got to speak about resolve in the morning, and I'm failing. I have eaten so much pie in the last 24 hours, it's ridiculous. So whatever it is, hey, bring it on. Because this stuff's going to be good if it's being given to the king and we're getting it. But here's the problem. The food that's prepared for the king, the meat and the wine, have already been dedicated to their pagan gods. And as Daniel hears about this, he goes, there's a problem. He wants to honor and worship his God in every way possible. And yes, they're changing his name, but that's not going to change his heart and who he knows who he is and he knows who God is. You can do what you want with his name. But when it comes to eating something that's been dedicated to another God, that's for him is where there's a problem. And he realizes he's got to do something about this. And this is where I think we often make our difficulties when we think about making a resolution or having a resolve to make a change, is that often what we do is we come up with a goal of where we want to be. But what Daniel does, he makes plans, not goals. And he actually says, look, I can't eat this. Let us have, and I find this interesting as well, he doesn't just say it's for me. He kind of goes, here's my friends, I'm going to bring in them, you know, give us all just water and vegetables. Because Daniel resolved not to defile himself, it says in verse 8, with the royal food and wine, and asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. So he doesn't fight when his name's taken. Because he's probably saying, you can call me whatever you want, tie me to whatever God you want, I know who I am. I know inwardly I will always worship and know and serve my God. My name's not worth standing for. Let me ask you a question. When do you resolve to take a stand? Because the easy thing for Daniel would have been to have just gone, do you know what? A little bit of good food once in a while isn't going to affect my worship of God. You know, we need to keep our strength up if we're going to fight the system. We need to actually be able to kind of make a difference in some way. And it looks and it smells so good. But he resolves, even before he sits at the table to receive this amazing food, he resolves, I'm not going to go anywhere near it. He sets himself some boundaries. He makes a plan. He goes to the chief official and he says, this is what I need to see happen if it's all right with you. And God shows favor and compassion to Daniel through this guy. And so before the temptation was ever there, he decided what he would do and what he would not do. He resolves in his heart ahead of time. He makes a decision before faced with the temptation to do what's right. Folks, can I encourage you to make the presence of God a priority in your life? Seek him. Depend on him. Live and dwell in his word. Make plans, not goals, to spend time with God. Whether it means writing into your diary, setting an alarm, whatever it is, find a place and a purpose to actually have that resolve of saying, this is so important to me, this is what I'm going to do. Renew your mind. Learn to walk by faith, not by sight. Hear his spirit guiding you as you make your plans and not just go, well, what I want to get to that point. Think about how am I actually going to get there? In Proverbs 16, verse 9, it says, in their hearts, humans plan their course, but the Lord establishes their steps. That even as he makes his plans, he sees God at work in the official and in others around him. But also see the importance of not just doing it alone. See the wisdom of Daniel, because Daniel says to this leader who's above him, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then compare our appearance to that of the young men who eat the royal food and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. So he doesn't just do it on his own. He involves his friends, whether they like it or not. And I think if we're going to make plans, we've got to hold ourselves accountable to other people and also have other people who are willing to walk that journey with us so that we can encourage each other, so we can say, do you know what, it's not going so well this week. And then you can say, do you know what, it's not going so well for me this week either. So you can spur one another on towards the goal that you've set yourselves. Because having the support, the encouragement, and the ability to involve and stand with others, in this day and age especially, I think is so important. In the conversation in one of the breaks yesterday in Alpha, one of the things we were looking at is that one of the biggest fears that people have today is the issue of loneliness. That actually feeling, even in a room full of people, that you are actually on your own. And for Daniel, yes, he knew that God was with him, but he also knew that in order to succeed, he needed other people there with him. And whether they were willing volunteers or not, I don't know. This also, by the way, is not necessarily a biblical example of being vegan, okay? It's just they do it for 10 days. I don't know whether they then go back to eating meat or not, but one of the things you see is that people go, oh, well, yeah, veganism is in the Bible. Yeah, well, for 10 days it was, but there we go. Anyway, so that was just a side note. So he and his friends could have said, you know, we'll follow the Babylonian religion outwardly, but continue to follow our faith inwardly. But I think that's an impossibility for any of us that are wanting to have a true faith in God. You see, Nebuchadnezzar could change their home, their dress, their names, their culture, but the one thing he can't change is their hearts. These four friends, at great personal risk, resolve to trust God, even if it meant death. And I think for us, we need to resolve at times to stand out in the right ways, at the right time, and for the right reasons. And we need to have wisdom. And maybe ask ourselves, God, is this worth taking a stand for? Or is this something that's not that big a deal, and for now, I just let it go? That I just resolve to follow you, even though times are tough. Because what we see as you go through the book of Daniel is time and again, Daniel and his friends face ever-increasing opposition. Daniel ends up at one point in a den of lions. His other three friends end up having to walk through a fiery furnace because they are refusing to bow down to Nebuchadnezzar and all his egotistical pagan gods, and even the statue that he makes that's a huge thing, or even just to pray to the pagan gods. And time and again, they have the resolve that our relationship with our God is more important than anything else, even our own lives. And we've just finished this Talking Jesus as a series, and may have come to an end, but do you know, I believe that there are still opportunities every single day for some of us to actually make a resolution of, in some way, God, will you use me? Will you help me stand out in my family, in my home, in my workplace, wherever you place me today for you? Because Jesus says of us, for those of us who have put our faith and our lives in his hands, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Because I'm often amazed of hearing stories of people that are just looking for answers and are looking to know that God's real. And maybe they don't even know it's God that they're looking for, but they're looking to see that there's more to life than what they've got right now. And you might actually be the greatest example they will ever come across. Because one, they see it's real in you, and two, they see the faith that you have in God, that no matter what life throws at you, you will still resolve to follow him. So just think, had those young men compromised and not had the courage to stand out, nothing historic would have happened. There probably wouldn't have been a book of Daniel in the Bible. And I don't know about you, but I would rather be remembered for standing out than forgotten for blending in. Because Jesus himself resolved to stand for us and to be crucified on a cross for you and for me. And the Apostle Paul calls us not to be conformed to the patterns of this world, but to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. And then we'll be able to test and approve what his will is, his good, his pleasing, and his perfect will. And so can I encourage you this morning, even if you've broken all your New Year's resolutions, today is a new day where you can resolve, as it says in Psalm 37, to commit your way to the Lord, trust in him, and he will act. Because I think so often we make resolutions and we just think it's all about what we do. And especially if we make resolutions about our relationship with God, we think it's about us doing it for him. When in reality, it's about him doing it in us. And that sometimes we just need to have the faith to say, God, I'm placing all of me and all that I am and have into your hands, and I will resolve no matter what to follow you. Because through Daniel and his friends, God reveals his power as they continually resolve to put him first. As they increasingly see difficult life-threatening situations, their resolve holds. These young teenagers are an incredible example. And as I get older, I want to be a person who is investing into those young men and women that are in that other room. We are blessed at this church. We have 350 young people on the books of this church. There are churches out there would kill to get a tenth of that. Isn't that incredible? And even if I don't know of anything I can do in my own life, I resolve to show them the power and the majesty and the grace and the love of God. That as life throws everything at them, I will resolve to stand with them and show them who God is. So will you dare to be a Daniel? And maybe this morning you feel like you can't do it, but just, I don't know about you, but I really want a spirit of boldness. I want wisdom. I want courage to know when to take a stand and when to let it go. And when God shows me that this is worth it, I pray that he gives you and I the resolve in our hearts to stand up, to stand out, to be different for the glory of God, to show his love, his heart, to a broken and a fearful world. And I pray that he gives you and I the courage and the resolve at the right time and the wisdom when I need it to stand out for him and to resolve to keep going even when I fail. God bless you.